We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand, that fine gentleman over there, the one, the only, the incomparable, the heart of the Midwest, Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I got a decent night of sleep, and that's largely because I always ignore Oregon games past 10 p.m. now. I'm emotionally invested, but not to that point. So it's good that Oregon won. It's good that I got some sleep. And I had a pretty wonderful Saturday watching college football. So everything is sort of aligning pretty well for a good show for me, I hope.
And making chili. Don't forget about the chili.
I made chili. I did laundry. I watched a ton of college football. I formed opinions about the college football I watched. I have no complaints, Ty. I have a lot of thoughts.
As do I. Week 11 now officially in the books. We did have another top 10 team go down, which we'll talk about momentarily. That makes it 22, count them, top 10 teams that have lost so far this season. And we still have a good chunk of the way to go. Maybe not in terms of weeks, but certainly right, in terms of ammunition on the schedule as we get into conference championship games. There is a lot of runway left in this season for things to go sideways. So we'll talk through that Oklahoma loss and some of the other action of note here in our Week 11 recap show. We appreciate you stopping by. Again, I am Ty. He is Dan. Go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. There you can find the articles that we post 3 a week in addition to all of our old episodes. Please do subscribe out on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. That really does help the show. Or anywhere, frankly, if you want to go to Spotify or Google, any of those places, subscribing or following along with the show really does help us out. Also, if you go on out to solidgiveaway.com, it's a new thing that we're doing. Robert Griffin III, again, had a really good day in the booth. He was a ton of fun to listen to, as per usual, just loves the game of football.
Was it Miami, Florida State, right?
Miami, Florida State game.
It's great.
We're giving away a signed RG3 mini helmet. If you go on out to solidgiveaway.com, it's totally free to enter. You just have to follow a few quick steps. We're going to draw a winner after the conference championship game. So I think like December 8th, somewhere in that vicinity. We'll talk about it in a little bit more detail on the show as that gets closer. And last but certainly not least, we have folks who are watching this live. They are doing so because they subscribed out on our Patreon at verballers.com, verballers.com. You can become a certified or premium verballer. You get access to this show, all of our shows early. You can hop on the Discord server. You can watch some of these shows, get access to our bonus content and much, much more. Is there anything I left out, Daniel?
No, that is fully everything I can think of. SolidSaturday.com, 11 a.m. Eastern on Saturday mornings for our live preview show.
So we named this past Saturday St. Bernard Saturday.
Yeah, I have the sound if you'd like to hear it again.
I would, please, if you could.
Across the country.
I did play that sound while in the vicinity of my own pup, and she was quite confused, if I don't say so myself. St. Bernard Saturday, I think, lived up to the billing, man.
I do as well.
I think it was the proper labeling for a Saturday where we did have a bunch of big road games. We had a bunch of just, you know, highly ranked teams in action. In some cases, they took the St. Bernard-sized dump. In other cases, they kind of squatted like they wanted to and then pulled up at the last second. I think we did actually a pretty good job labeling what we saw in Week 11 in advance.
Yeah, in some cases, you are probably part of a fan base that wanted a shot or two of brandy or whiskey after your team's performance delivered to you by a gigantic furry dog with a tiny barrel around its neck.
We would love to sit here and wax poetic about how we feel. Why don't we get to how you feel? Yeah. 408 Verbal 1, arguably the best batch of reverbs that we've had in certainly this year, maybe in the last couple years. Dylan, our guy who cuts these up and helps us out with some social media stuff, did a bang-up job. Kudos to him. Kudos to you for calling in to the Reverb Line at 408 Verbal 1. Here they are. Here are your Week 11 reverbs. Enjoy.
Braylon Allen is 17 years old. He can't legally buy a cigarette. He can't watch pornography. He can't vote. But he can run for a 6 straight 100-yard game against the Big Ten. Go Badgers, baby.
Hey, Ty. Hey, Dan. This is Brady from Dallas.
Hi, Dan and Ty. This is Luke from Salem, Oregon.
Ty, Dan, Chris in Tampa. Quick question. If you outscore a team 40-6 in the second half of a game after you spotted them a 25-point lead, is that still a crock-potting? I'll hang up and listen. Hell State.
I would just like to thank the Auburn Tigers for choosing this weekend to honor the Atlanta Falcons by blowing a 28-3 lead.
I just wanted to congratulate my Gators on becoming the first team in recorded history to win a bona fide clunker while simultaneously scoring 70 points in a game.
Well, at least Florida was able to rally from behind and beat these Bulldogs.
But I gotta say, my favorite part of the day had nothing to do with Georgia. It was seeing Dan Mullen celebrate in the locker room after his team gave up 52 points to Stanford. I mean, what in the actual F is wrong with that guy?
Howdy, this is Ryan from Dallas. Just want to give a really big shout out to Florida for that huge home dog win against Stanford. This is such a big deal for the program and can't wait to see what they do next.
Just wanted to let everyone know that the Holy Cross Crusaders are once again Patriot League champions. The cross is back, baby. Let's go.
This is Grant, one of your resident Iowa State fans. Do I laugh? Do I cry? I don't know. I don't know.
Country roads, go back home to the place you belong. Kansas State is 7-3. Go Cats, baby.
And I just finished watching one of the most hideous rock fights in history between Arkansas and LSU.
Does early game James Franklin have a little bit of late game James Franklin in him? Go Blue.
Hi, USC and LSU. Can I interest you in a football coach who likes to run fake field goals at the 2-yard line instead of leaving the offense on the field? I know where you can get one for cheap.
Dan, Ty, Jimmy from Michigan. Can I get a double dude alert for Aiden Hutchinson and David Ajabo? That Penn State quarterback's going to be laying on a couch talking to his therapist about them for years.
Hey, this is Dan in Minneapolis. You know, if Purdue grads were like Ohio State grads, we'd probably point out that the Boilers have still outscored the Buckeyes in the last two matchups head-to-head. Of course, if Purdue grads were like Ohio State grads, we probably couldn't do that pass.
I put in the solid Saturday chat today that Ohio State was going to win 48-17. Little did I know that was going to be the halftime score.
Just reminding you that Baylor is 2-0 versus SEC teams. Pick 'em Bears.
Hey, Sooner fans. I know you're hurting right now, but look at the bright side. You got SEC money on the way. You'll be able to afford to fire your coach after you go 8-4 every year. Pick 'em Bears.
I'm so disappointed that Lincoln Riley didn't try to put in Ralph Rucker in the game so we could all hear about Ralph Rucker being a front runner for the Heisman Trophy.
Dan, Ty, it's Connor, writer of Watching College Football, coming to you from Texas. Baylor, my goodness, And I see all these people on Twitter saying, we're stunned Baylor beat Oklahoma. You're stunned? You must not be a part of Baylor Nation because we already knew. Sick 'em bear.
Texas is bad.
It's almost 8 p.m. and my window of opportunity just opened. And I turn on the TV just in time to watch Texas throw pick six to Kansas.
Rock chalk to KU. I finally SEC Texas.
This is Lisa in Tallahassee. The U just turned into an L for loser. Go Noles.
I'm trying to do the upside down U that I saw Florida State fans doing on the video version of this show. Yeah, she's right. Shout out Lisa.
Lisa's message this morning, I was listening to that at about, I don't know, 6 a.m. while drinking some tea, hot tea. When she did the at the end, I almost did a over my pup. That just killed me. Thank you so much to one and all for calling in. Great batch of reverbs, perhaps a little painful for some of you in Big 12 territory. We will talk about that here momentarily, Dan. I guess the only place we can start is the Baylor-Oklahoma game.
Yeah, I was going to give you an opportunity to explain what your like Swift Saturday interpretation was, because you mentioned that the theme of Saturday was going to be Taylor Swift's 10-minute dismissal of Jake Gyllenhaal.
You're stealing my thunder here, like Stu Mandel, but that's fine. We're friends.
Oh, I did?
You're stealing my thunder.
I thought you forgot.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that. It's okay. We're still good, but
okay.
We'll get to that when we get to it.
I was trying to tee you up.
No, you stole it. You took my line.
I'm sorry.
Let's talk about Baylor, Oklahoma. 27-14, Oklahoma suffers its very first loss of the year. We had a double field rush in this game, Dan. Did you see that?
We did. Yes, I did.
Had a double field rush. So Baylor, you know, is up late, 3 seconds left. They had called a timeout and they rushed the field. I don't think fans knew it. They had to get everybody off the field. Lincoln Riley was pissed off about that. He didn't like the fact that fans were on the field, assailing some of his players. I get that much. And so he was curious as to why there was no penalty. Then he was peeved by the fact that Dave Aranda kicked a field goal to make this one 27-14. Dave Aranda said, look, I get where he's coming from. I don't care because point differential is one of the tiebreakers when it comes to who's going to win the Big 12 or go to the Big 12 championship game.
Right.
And I need the 3 points. Lincoln Riley said that this violated a code. Personally, I like the fact that Dave Aranda did it just to peeve Lincoln Riley and violate the code or whatever. Because Lincoln Riley will score 60 on you. He doesn't care about a code.
Right.
That notwithstanding, your final score here was 27-14. How much of this game did you have a chance to watch?
Basically, most of it live, and then I made up for whatever I missed this morning. No, the general tenor of the game is Oklahoma's offense, especially on the road, especially with Caleb Williams and Spencer Rattler when he came in, was all over the place. Baylor did a fantastic job, but Caleb Williams threw a pick into what looked like septuple coverage.
Something
I don't know
like
what the
that. Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
He threw it to a lot of green shirts, and then he also threw a pick in which it seemed like a busted play, and he just kind of threw it up, playing three flies up, and just a Baylor guy just kind of happened to be in the area and ambled his way over to intercept it. And so the mistakes from Oklahoma, especially in the second half, as Baylor just went straight at the Sooners, right? It was Gary Bohannon on the ground. It was, of course, Abram Smith on the ground. And even though Gary Bohannon had his moments that I'm sure took the breath away from Baylor fans, not in a fantastic way, he made plays. He rose to the moment. And that kind of, to me, and looking across the sport, I don't have a nickname for my Saturday. What, summit the moment? I don't know. But it's a matter of meeting the moment in these huge matchups that I thought Baylor did. And I thought a number, you know, obviously Michigan did. We're going to go across the sport and do it and talk about the teams that met the moment and the teams that weren't able to. But ultimately, Baylor did what good teams are able to do, which is beat a good, not great team at home with good defense, with taking advantage of opportunities, and getting the most out of its players. Quite impressive.
Yeah, both quarterbacks looked a little yippy early.
Mm-hmm.
But I do give credit to Baylor for, I think, seeing the field as quickly as they did and realizing, look, it might not be there for us in the passing game. And that's despite all the talk that I think I, you know, put forth about you should be able to pass on this Oklahoma defense. And look, they've had injuries all year. it's still not been 100%. They were better in this game against the pass, but it's just that Baylor was able to get a lot more on the ground. And so whether it was Gary Bohannon or Abram Smith, as you mentioned, Baylor knew what to do in this game in order to move the football. They were able to create some of those turnovers, utilize some of those mistakes to their advantage, and really on a defensive level, hold the Sooners down to just 260 yards. The other thing that we should mention is Caleb Williams did struggle in this game. He was yanked in favor of Spencer Rattler. It didn't have much effect on the game, but there was a moment late in the third quarter where it was like, if you want to do this thing, Lincoln, if you want to win this game, you're going to have to go with somebody else because Caleb Williams was really struggling out there.
Yep.
They talked on the broadcast a lot about how Dave Aranda or some of his defensive staff, how they were on the record and some of the pregame meetings talking about how they needed to disguise coverages and kind of keep things under wrap,
of course,
knowing that this is a freshman quarterback, they might be able to confuse him. And at long last, look, we've been saying it for a couple weeks. What was going to happen when Caleb Williams went up against a better defense? We got our answer.
Yep.
He got benched is ultimately what happened here. And Baylor gets a big win at home. They do still have a chance at the Big 12. Whether or not you believe Dave Aranda kicking the field goal at the end as part of some sort of point differential move or just an FU to Lincoln Riley, it doesn't really matter. The final score here is 27-14. And the Bears with another impressive home win. They've been very, very solid this year. What they did a week ago against TCU, no bueno, but to come back strong now and knock off the only unbeaten team in the Big 12 is a pretty big deal. So kudos to Dave Aranda.
Bear fans also coming to play, chanting SEC at the end of this game. SEC, SEC, which also I believe Kansas fans did in DKR at the end of the Texas game, which I salute the pettiness. I always do.
Let's talk about that Texas game next, shall we?
Oh, man, going right into it. All right.
Let's go right into it because I didn't plan on doing this, but this was sort of an interesting moment in college football, wasn't it? Kansas was on a 56-game road losing streak in the Big 12, and they end up winning this game in overtime, 57-56. Texas obviously has a lot of work to do. This isn't because we're trying to dunk on Texas as much as it is, I think, trying to celebrate Kansas. This is a big win for Kansas.
I mean, we're talking about a very down team and program, and also Kansas. And so here we are.
Kansas was something like a 31-point dog. The numbers in this game were absurd. You had Casey Thompson with 6 touchdowns. Xavier Worthy had something like 22 targets, finished with a bunch of yards and 3 touchdowns. It was not enough for the Longhorns. They lose at home in overtime to Kansas. Kansas started a backup, Jalen Daniels, after an injury to Jason Bean. And I came out of this game. You can make all the Texas jokes you want. I came out of this game with even greater respect for Lance Leipold. Went for two, first period of overtime, converted. Also went for it on his own 35 with like 3 minutes left, which was highly questionable. But Lance Leipold, I think, is trying to put his money where his mouth is and get the Kansas program going in a good direction here, build a new culture, and at least make them feel like they can win, which they did here, scoring 57 points and ending that losing streak on the road against Texas. Just almost inconceivable that they would do this, but credit to Leipold, man. This was a nice, nice win.
Yeah, through everything that Oklahoma could handle, through a half as well. And so you're seeing glimmers. Now, Texas is, once again, a down program. This is the first time they've, lost 5 games since the mid-50s in a row?
Yeah.
So Kansas was the all-gas, no-breaks program on the field at DKR. And I watched this game. I was paying attention to this game. When I was flipping over, I was just sort of monitoring. And watching that second half, it was infuriating as somebody with no ties to Texas. But somebody who has watched his team and watched other teams do this, when you're running for 8 yards a carry, and I have to speak in codes now because I don't want to swear around my children, KFR, keep effing running, right? I've yelled that at my team. I've yelled that at Michigan when I'm watching with Jody and she's into a game, whatever. It's just like, if you can't stop anybody and you're running the ball well. I think it was Roschon Johnson near the end of this game was ripping off 6-yard, 8-yard, 12-yard. and the quarterbacks are making mistakes, and they're putting their own defense back on the field because of those mistakes. They're rotating early on. Like, I'm not taking Texas seriously as a good team, but if you're a 31-point favorite and you don't know to just keep going directly at a gassed Kansas defense who's not getting off the field and not making any stops, what are we doing?
Yep.
What are we doing?
Yep.
And say what you will about Mario Cristobal's big dumb offense at times, but if they're ripping off 5, 6, 7 yards a carry, he's taking the air out of the ball. And so I understand Texas was playing from behind. I think it was 49-42 at that point. They're playing from behind most of this game. But man, if your own defense can't get off the field and you have Bijan Robinson, 5, 6 yards a carry, Roschon Johnson, just run the ball. Run. And they didn't.
I don't get it. I just don't get it. We talked in the preseason about how if Tom Herman had run more with Bijan Robinson, perhaps he'd still be coach. They have an opportunity to run, especially in this football game. They choose
now. Their offensive line is not great.
It's not, but they still have talent back there.
Yeah, it's fine.
And they were doing just fine running the football. So Texas goes down. Kudos to Kansas and Lance Leipold for getting the job done and having the cojones to go for two in the first period of overtime to secure the dub.
I love that.
Let's move over to the Big Ten, Dan. Ohio State 59, Purdue 31. You may recall 3 years ago, Purdue knocked off number two Ohio State 49-20. This was the game. This was the game, Dan. Mm-hmm. This was the game that was the 10-minute version of All Too Well.
Gotcha.
This was the game. This was Purdue was Jake Gyllenhaal in this metaphor. Did you watch this game?
I did.
Man. Unbelievable performance here by the Buckeyes. They scored on all 7 first half possessions. They had 624 yards of offense. Never a doubt. Absolutely never a doubt here. An enormous day through the air for CJ Stroud at 5 touchdowns, 3 of which went to Garrett Wilson, who also ran for a touchdown. We could sit here, we could read stats off till we're blue in the face. Ohio State, very, very good on offense. The only blemish, if you want to call it that, and again, I'm splitting hairs, is that you gave up 31 to Purdue. And Aiden O'Connell threw for almost 400 yards at 4 touchdowns. He wasn't sacked once. Ohio State didn't need to do a whole lot on defense because their offense was like a hot knife through butter. But like, this was a good showing from Ohio State. And I am curious to see now, moving forward, how the committee starts to handle this Ohio State Buckeyes team. I'm just curious. I'm not saying they're going to jump Oregon. I don't think they should jump Oregon. Obviously, they played head-to-head. But
yeah,
you compare the two teams, you look at what Ohio State did here, and it would not at all be a shocker to me if on Tuesday night we record a reaction video when we're talking about Ohio State in front of the Ducks.
Sure. When I talk about meeting the moment, Purdue is I think a good team, or a pretty good team, however you want to quantify Purdue at this point. But in order to pull an upset as a 3-touchdown favorite, one, you need performances from your players, but orbiting those performances, like what we saw, Rondale Moore just run wild a few years ago in the upset over Ohio State, and orbiting those performances is doing every little thing correctly. Things that aren't statistically seen on a box score, right? It's setting edges. It's coming down with 50-50 balls. It's not turning the ball over. It's performing well in special teams, punting the ball well. And Purdue, as a 3-touchdown dog, they flub a handoff, right?
Yeah.
Ohio State's up 14-7, 21-7, whatever. They flub a kick return catch, right? They flub a return catch and give Ohio State a short field. So we have Ohio State with 3 virtually unstoppable receivers, an unstoppable running back who's ripping off long plays, a quarterback who is exceedingly comfortable, and all Purdue needs to do is just play. Just play relatively mistake-free. And we talked about this with Ari Wasserman. The case against Purdue going into this game is Purdue can sneak up on people. There was no sneaking up after what they did to Michigan State. And so Purdue's a good team in their own right. They're going to beat a lot of teams if they are playing on the level of what they've shown these past few weeks. But against Ohio State, you got to play perfect. We saw Oregon do it. You get the 4th-and-1 stop. You get the keep effing running situation with CJ Verdell against Ohio State. It was working against the Buckeyes. You keep doing it, right? So you have to rise to the moment. And Purdue on the road, offensively at times, did But that's not good enough. It's just not good enough. And that's how you get down whatever it was. It was 35-7 if you were taking a long poop to start the game. Like, it was just, it was out of control almost immediately.
Yeah, just a constant dunking by Ohio State and that offense as they roll here at home. 59-31 again, your final. Staying in the Big Ten, let's talk about Michigan-Penn State. First off, I hope Jimmy from Michigan, who called our reverb line, is okay. That cannot possibly be his real voice, that sort of ring announcer voice that he did. I appreciate it. And please, sir, call back more. But I hope he's okay.
Yeah.
Slow start for Michigan in this game. I don't know how much of this you watched. I watched most of it.
A good chunk, yeah.
Slow start for Michigan in this game. They kept with the plan. They didn't ask Cade McNamara to do too much. They relied on their defense to change the football game. And they brought a lot of heat on a beleaguered Sean Clifford. How do I know that he was still feeling the pain of whatever he did in the Iowa game? Because every time he went to the ground, whether he was hit or not, it took him an extra second to get up. You could tell he's not right. You could tell he's trying to battle through it. It didn't
like
help.
Like you getting out of bed this morning.
Like me getting out of bed this morning. I did something to the shoulder. It's, you know, I have probably a worse excuse than Sean Clifford, who has been under duress the last couple weeks after his injury in that Iowa football game. He was sacked 7 times in this game, Dan. The offensive line for Penn State didn't really do him any favors. I thought for the most part now, maybe I'm in the minority. I thought this was maybe not the first half. The first half was a brutal watch. But in the second half, I thought this was an interesting watch.
Definitely.
I thought this was an interesting watch down the stretch. Both teams had multiple chances to, you know, kind of make this game their own. Penn State was not able to take advantage. They did run the ball a little better. They could have ran it much, much better. They gave it to your boy Kevon Lee like 20 times for 88 yards, something like that.
Yeah, runs hard.
Seemed like they ran it a little bit better. I thought Sean Clifford, albeit injured and definitely not his 100% self, looked okay. It was just Michigan with the defense. It was just Michigan converting on some of those key moments. It was Michigan getting a big play late. A few more of those plays go Penn State's way, and maybe we're talking about this game a little bit differently, but Michigan rose to the moment, came into Beaver Stadium, just a weird weather day where you had snow flurries and rain and clouds and sun and wind, like pretty much everything you could ask for. A crowd that, you know, wasn't told there was no whiteout. They had a lot of factors working against them to go into Beaver Stadium and win the way they did. I thought was damn impressive. And look, take all the Jim Harbaugh not winning the big game stuff and put it to the side, because this was a big game. This is one that they needed if they wanted to keep pace with some of the others in the Big Ten and the Big Ten East. And they delivered 21-17. Great win.
Yeah, Penn State was almost ranked, folks, coming into this game. So whatever size game you judge that to be. No, it was obviously quite impressive for Michigan, who, look, it's what, Ojabo and Hutchinson? Are they the best bookend edge rushers in the conference?
So good. So good.
They're ridiculous. And the best I can remember in recent years for Michigan. And when you have that ability to get after the quarterback, and I know Penn State's offensive line isn't amazing, but it changes the calculus for what your defense is able to do and take chances with. And obviously Sean Clifford being hobbled doesn't help, and not being able to run the ball so that they can just sort of trust the linebackers behind them to make plays as well doesn't help. But Michigan, let's start with Michigan on offense. Cade McNamara, while not going downfield, he was just a playmaker, right? In the red zone, hitting Roman Wilson in tight windows, made plays. And that the last one, obviously, hitting the tight end on the crossing route, it was huge. It was huge. And Hassan Haskins is, like, with Blake Corum out, full-on dude. Both running the ball, tough yardage, short yardage. He had a chip, I want to say, on an edge rusher for Penn State that bought Cade McNamara just an extra half second, a split second.
I know exactly what player you're talking about.
On a key conversion. Yeah, it just bought him just that split second. So just the little stuff that Michigan rose to the moment. Penn State gets a strip sack with, 2-3 minutes left in this game. They pick up the ball in very advantageous, I want to say in the 20s somewhere, in Michigan territory. And it's at that moment, you're like, it's 14-all, it's late in the game. This is when Penn State and Mike Yurcich, whatever, they call like Excelsior, right? Here is this like plan for this specific moment, right? Where you're just like, okay, we're going to hit Jahan Dotson here. We're going to call a screen to Kevon Lee here. This is like, this is what we practice. This is our run. This is our moment to get in the end zone with advantageous, taking advantage of a turnover. And they don't. And they just don't. They have to settle for a field goal, and they give Michigan the opportunity to themselves, for themselves, to rise to that moment. And Michigan does. And that, to me, is the difference maker, right? Because there are going to be these high leverage situations that really strong, good teams rise to. And if it's an injury thing, whatever. Penn State has the best receiver, I guess, non-Ohio State receiver in the Big Ten, right? They have the best offensive weapon on the field in Jahan Dotson. Settle for three. They're not able to get him loose. Parker Washington was making plays. Excelsior was not to be. Penn State did not rise to the moment.
No,
and
no,
Michigan comes through on the road. I'm not going to say it's a huge game, but it's a tough spot. That's a hard place to win.
Sure.
And beat a Penn State, especially that Penn State defense. And Michigan, just they put it all together. And I'm not going to say they won their clunker, but they won it tough, which
yeah,
is impressive.
They did. And also Penn State, it should be mentioned, Penn State had a moment in the first half where they were on the 2 or 3 yard line.
Saw that.
Lined up for a field goal. It was a really bad fake field goal. They were obviously feeling themselves a little bit after converting on a fake punt earlier in the game, which was a beautiful pass, by the way, that converted for fourth down. The kick, the fake field goal was not nearly as pretty.
It was a bad throw. It was a bad throw. I actually thought it was there. I actually thought the play could have been there because he had a block on the edge. It was poorly executed. And look, if you want a touchdown on the two of your opponent on fourth and goal, trot out your offense.
Yeah.
Trot out your offense. And Penn State, not a great goal-to-go offense, to be sure. But I don't know. I'd rather have it on the arm of Sean Clifford than the holder. So here we are.
Michigan, by the way, an all-time potential trap game.
It's a trap. It's a trap.
Coming next week on the road against Maryland 1 week before Ohio State. Maryland's not very good.
No. There's some team speed, though. There's some feistiness.
But that's a trap game. That is a letdown look ahead if I've ever seen one. We'll talk more about that when we do our preview show a little bit later on in the week. A few other games here at the top of the show before we dive into specific conferences. I want to talk about your Oregon Ducks. Oregon played the late game at home against Wazoo. This was the Gilmore game with the crappy camera again.
Oh my God.
They're trying to sweat that poor guy out. I don't know what ESPN's doing to him. I don't know what ESPN's doing to us, frankly. Because there was a moment, actually, in this football game where the bad camera came back to bite us.
There was a moment. Well, it's not just the bad camera. It's the bad batch of cameras or lack of cameras. Like, people make fun of the Pac-12 network. The Pac-12 network broadcast is way better than the production value top to bottom of this specific production crew. And that's not to besmirch anybody on the crew itself. I'm sure everybody's doing their best. But the equipment, the lack of equipment, the like upscaling of standard definition for the wide cam, it's been true the whole year. And I'm just not a big Rod Gilmore fan. But I thought this game was as thoroughly an Oregon, a 2021 Oregon game, as I mentioned to you, as was humanly possible. Oregon did the successful things that it's been doing all year. Now, they jumped out to a big early lead, which is kind of rare for Oregon.
Yeah.
They go up 14-0 after Jaden DeLora. There's a long play, and he steps out. Or he fumbles it out of the end zone, right? After a successful drive, Oregon's able to take advantage with a couple successful drives. Oregon's offense kind of goes into a shell via a Travis Dye fumble and a couple of kind of guppy nothing third down throws from Anthony Brown to the line of scrimmage on third and long. That's just not going to happen. So Oregon is sort of lifeless going into halftime, 14-all. And then they just sit on Wazoo, who can't stop the run. It's a smaller defense, and they just go straight at him with Anthony Brown, with Travis Dye, with Byron Cardwell, the freshman running back, who looks to be really good, by the way. He's the future of Oregon football in the backfield. And Anthony Brown doesn't need to make a lot of plays with his arm. And so they just slowly and methodically stomp Wazoo, and Anthony Brown fumbles it maybe at the goal line. There are no angles to prove or disprove the call during the review. So they'd call it a fumble, and they're like, well, couldn't really decipher it either way, so I guess it's got to stand.
Yeah.
And It kind of looked like he was across the line, but I don't know. They had to call it the way they did. It was just, you know, a bad execution of a review. And ultimately, the defense comes up big in the second half, and they just continue to sit on Wazoo. And I think they're up 38-17, could have been 45-17 if Anthony Brown, I guess, didn't fumble it as he crossed the goal line. And Wazoo got a garbage time touchdown, which made the game closer than it looked. And Oregon has its, what, third consecutive double-digit win? They're in a good place. They're definitely in a good place. They need to fix some of the turnover stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and Wazoo did come back a little bit in the second quarter. I mean, they tied this game up at 14 apiece going into halftime. Your boy Rod Gilmore dropped a little Ted Lasso reference, football is life. I don't know if you saw the old Danny Rojas, but, you know, the Ducks look like they're on a glide path here to the playoff. They need to keep winning. And the next couple weeks are going to be very crucial. They've got a road game against Utah next week, which obviously is going to be one of our headliners that we discuss on the preview show. You got the Oregon State rivalry game. Oregon State is a formidable opponent. We'll wait to see who they end up playing, provided they make it to the Pac-12 championship game out of the South, because that's still a little bit in flux. But provided Oregon continues on this trajectory, they will be playing somebody in the playoff. We don't know who, obviously, but and I think if they can continue to get these types of performances from their offense, right? Whatever we've said about Anthony Brown, Anthony Brown's a very, very good runner. And he's a big kid, too. I never realized how
super
big
impressive.
He is. 230, he runs, he's got moves. It was the strength of this running
game. Two ACL surgeries as well.
Two ACL surgeries makes it all the more impressive. The passing, not necessarily his forte, but 123 yards on the ground, two rushing touchdowns. Oregon as a team rushed for over 304 touchdowns. That is the strength of this football team, and I think it's maybe taken a while to find it for sure, but now that they're able to go out there and execute, this is a game that could have gotten a little yippy. It could have gotten a little weird. We talked about it on the preview. It's it wasn't a given that Oregon was going to turn in this kind of performance, and even though I don't know if they covered, it was right around 14, 14 and a half is the number. It was the garbage time touchdown that made this look a little closer than it was. Oregon played really, really well in the second half, and credit to Mario Cristobal and that offense for getting the job done.
No, if you can force Oregon into mistakes like false starts and third and nines and third and 11s, you've got them in a pretty good spot. The problem is Oregon is particularly good at generating third and fours and going for it on fourth and one. And Joe Moorhead is crazy creative in those moments. And so they're a tough out. They're for sure a tough out, especially when that pass rush gets going with Kayvon Thibodeau and they were, you know, turning over Wazoo. They had Verone McKinley had a great interception. And if you're making mistakes against Oregon and you're letting them run a little bit, they're a near impossible team to beat.
Let's talk about Cincinnati, Dan.
Yes.
Cincinnati played on Friday night against South Florida. They were favored by 23. They did not cover. Won by a 17-point margin, 45-28. If you watched the game on Friday, if you looked at my Twitter, I made the joke that it told you everything you needed to know about Cincinnati's playoff hopes when they got bumped from ESPN2 in favor of World Cup qualifying. Now, listen. I get it. I get that there are contracts and there are extenuating circumstances and that, you know, maybe
Well, they moved the game to another network,
They moved
right?
the game
it's
to
like
another
they
network.
Said, this game isn't worthy of our air.
Right. No. I get all that. Thank you. People tweeting at me. You don't understand. Yes, I understand that. I've been doing this longer than most of you. I get it.
Yeah.
My only point is that not emblematic? Is that not symbolic? Is that not a metaphor for where we're at with Cincinnati in this playoff thing right now? Because there's always something shinier. There's always something else that we'd rather talk about. It's not fair to them because they keep winning. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I found some symbolism in that. Maybe you didn't. But Cincinnati won. It'd be a stretch to say that they struggled here. I don't think they struggled. This was a 10-point game shortly after they kicked it over to ESPN News.
Yeah.
And so it was never really in doubt, but USF hung around. USF's a two-win team. They've been pretty bad this year. The operative point here, and what I want to call out, is that Cincinnati has SMU next week and then the American Championship in week 14. Provided they don't lose two games in a row, which they're not going to do, they will play Houston in that championship game. And Houston's been playing pretty damn well. If Cincinnati goes 2-0, that game will be in Cincinnati. If they go 1-1, that game will be in Houston. Either way, there are two games on this schedule, given the way Cincinnati's been playing, that I think are losable. I think they could lose that game to SMU. I think they could lose that game to Houston. And so, despite the fact that we've gone the last couple weeks on this podcast talking about how Cincinnati's got sort of this glide path into the playoff, or at least into being undefeated, there are games here. There are games here that I think are really interesting, that I think are definitely losable the last 3 weeks of the season. So nothing is a given for the Bearcats.
No, nothing's given for the Bearcats. Turnovers were an issue, letting USF back into the game in the second half, because at one point it was, what, 31-13, 14, something like that? Cincinnati was in a good place. It's just, and I don't know if it's a depth thing, obviously Jerome Ford doesn't play. He hurts his leg the week before, and I think one of the backup running backs was one of the fumbles. I think it was a receiver fumble and a running back fumble. So maybe that doesn't happen. That doesn't lead to points. It's tricky. It's tricky to go undefeated, and so I still give Cincinnati credit for not losing games.
Totally.
And I hate that we have to look at a Cincinnati season like this within the context of the playoff, because how many undefeated teams are there on the FBS level right now?
Yeah, not many.
Not a lot.
Not many.
Not a lot, but look, if we have to put it in a playoff context and we have to compare them against teams like Ohio State and Oregon and Oklahoma State and whoever, then you have to look at the performance against specific competition and being relatively unimpressed with an ability to consistently separate. So Cincinnati is a very good team to me still. But then with this context, within the playoff context, it takes on a new shade.
Yeah. All right. Final 45-28. Let's go over to the SEC. We have a lot to talk about in the SEC, Dan.
Yes, we do.
We had Georgia 41, Tennessee 17. Do you have the celebration music at the ready? 41-17, but that's a big 17, Dan. That is a big 17. Tennessee, the first team this year to score more than 13 against the Georgia Bulldogs. They looked frisky at first.
I was going to say, they looked frisky. Briefly.
Briefly. Yeah. In the first quarter. And I'm texting you, we're thinking, okay, all right. Maybe we got a game here. That was very short-lived. Georgia scored like the next 27 points. They won going away. They covered a 20-point spread. The story of this one, if there is any, I think is the Dogs' defense again, tightening the belt after looking a little leaky early. Tennessee played with a lot of tempo. Seemed like they were able to move the ball. Mm-hmm. Georgia got it together pretty quickly, as they often do. They got six sacks. They turned over Tennessee. They got some big stops inside their own territory. That was what catapulted them to a 24-point win here. But for a brief moment, only a brief moment, thought, okay, maybe Georgia's got some vulnerability here that Tennessee has found. Josh Heupel runs that high-powered attack now. 41-17, Georgia wins going away.
Georgia beat up on the defensive line. Obviously, depth is not going to be an issue for a long time for Georgia. They're going to need, they've had guys out with the flu stuff. They've had guys out that were nicked up mid game. I believe Kendall Milton, one of their rotation running backs, he hurt his knee a little bit ago. Like they're beat up and bruised. They still don't have a go-to receiver in the way that a lot of teams on their schedule do. You know, sometimes it's Brock Bowers. Sometimes it's whatever. Jermaine Burton, Adonai Mitchell made plays yesterday. But, without George Pickens, they don't have that necessarily consistent gravitational player. But to me, and you mentioned the defense, and defense made plays, they adjusted to Tennessee really well. A Tennessee team that has come out of the gates very strong basically every week. They're a team that game plans and executes really, really well at the start of games and largely throughout games. The Georgia defense is a different animal. To me, though, the story was Georgia's offense rising to a difficult moment playing in Neyland. Stetson Bennett, man, he's making plays, right? Yeah, the stuff like third and nine, scrambles for first downs, near the end zone, has sort of the weave in and out, touchdown run, is finding guys, spreading the ball around. Like, at a certain point, we just have to say, this guy's a good quarterback.
Yeah.
This guy is a good quarterback performing well for a great team. And we talk about what he's not, right? We talk about that he's not a Heisman guy. He's not a first-round NFL pick. I don't know. He seems like a fit to me. He seems like an excellent fit for an excellent team who makes plays, and we should probably be putting more respect on his name because he's winning tricky games, not impossible games, but he's making plays for the best team in America, and he is a big reason why this offense or this team is performing to the level it is. And so, hats off.
And
great,
look,
great player.
There were moments last year, mm-hmm. right before they brought in JT Daniels, right? About this time last year.
Right.
Where we had serious questions about Stetson Bennett. One of the early narratives for us in the 2020 season was, is this guy for real or not? Is this guy good?
Right.
And he was at first, and then he showed some cracks, and he got yanked, and it was like, now they're going with JT Daniels. That's going to unlock right. this offense. JT Daniels can't stay on the field. He keeps getting hurt.
No.
And Stetson Bennett has done nothing but rise to the occasion. And oh, by the way, he has proven, I think, that he can also get better. That there,
sure.
that maybe what we saw last year was not his ceiling. He's been very, very good. I don't think he cares if he's not a first-round NFL talent or if he is perceived as some sort of game manager. Whatever.
Right.
Georgia's undefeated. They're far and away the best team in the country right now. That could change as this season has changed at a moment's notice. But Georgia wins here. This is a big win. Big win for them to go to Knoxville and get a 24-point dub.
The reality is he threw 5 to 7 pretty bad passes against Alabama last year and had a down game against eventual SEC East champ Florida and gave JT Daniels an opening.
Yeah.
Well, JT Daniels, unfortunate injury luck, gives Stetson Bennett a chance to, you know, turn his own narrative around, and he more than does. We'll see what happens in the SEC championship game. That's the hurdle, and it's a sizable one at that, but he's giving Georgia every chance in the world to win any game they play against any team in the country.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Dan, we have many games to get to yet, so let me read off some other SEC action. Three games that we don't need to say too much about. We had Alabama 59-3 over New Mexico State.
They covered.
Bama covered 51.5, which is remarkable. We had Missouri knocking off South Carolina 31-28, a big game for Tyler Beatty, goes over 200 on the ground. We had Kentucky beating Vandy by 17. The other games in the SEC that we should say a quick thing or two about, we had Ole Miss 29-19 over Texas A&M. Great win for Ole Miss. We'll talk a little bit more about this for sure.
Yes, sir.
Mississippi State completing the largest comeback in school history, trailing 28-3 at one point and winning out over Auburn 43-34. We had the rock fight to end all rock fights in Baton Rouge as Arkansas knocks off LSU 16-13 in double overtime. And then we had the Florida game, Dan. 70-52 over Samford. I think Florida has officially packed it in, Dan. Do you agree?
Yeah,
do you not
agree? Why did you keep playing that after pack it up, pack it in three times? That's all you need to know.
Florida may be in pack it in territory. They had won their previous four games against FCS opponents by a score of 199-16. The Bulldogs scored touchdowns on five of their first six drives. They led 42-28 late into the second quarter. They gained 530 yards of offense. Florida looks like they may be ready for the season to be over. Granted, 700 yards of offense, they scored 70 points, but 12 penalties. At times, they looked like it was a spring game on defense, just really not seeing plays out till the final whistle. And the fact that they trailed this late, the fact that they were trailing for a good chunk of this game, and that they came even within a stone's throw of losing to Samford, tells you an awful lot about where this team's at right now with Dan Mullen, Dan.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And look, Florida won the game, but I mean, just, it's pathetic. It was, I don't know where you go with Florida at this point. Dan Mullen's buyout's like $12, $13 million, something like that, I think I saw. You can make the change if you're positive you got your guy, or you can force him to completely overhaul the staff, and I assume that's, I think that's a little likelier, but I don't know. I don't know how much worse it can get for Florida and how you can have faith that it's going to turn around. So there's where we are with Florida, and yeah, just a pathetic showing. Good for Samford, but Samford's not even that good a team in the SoCon, are they?
No.
No, I think they're like an average. They were 4-5 going into the game. Yeah, so talking about an average SoCon team. We're not talking North Dakota State waltzing into Gainesville and giving them their best shot. So yeah, I don't know how much more there is to add. Good for Mizzou for beating South Carolina. Really impressive win over Texas A&M for Ole Miss. The LSU-Arkansas game was kind of wild, and Arkansas won its clunker. KJ Jefferson made plays, man.
Yeah, second half. He looked really
second
good.
Second half plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mizzou gets to 500, by the way, I believe. I know I'm all over the place in this one, but yeah, it was a good game. Was it Beatty, you said, had a good game on the ground?
Tyler Beatty, 209. Yeah, he looked really good. Let me go over to the Ole Miss A&M game for a second.
Please, let's do that.
You know, the Rebels are known for their offense, and they had 400 yards in the first half against a top five caliber defense. So that was the first thing that I think was very notable here. They weren't as effective in the second half. A&M did sort of mount a comeback. But the fact that Ole Miss played the kind of defense that they did, I thought was damn impressive, man. Like, I know it's Zach Calzada. I know that A&M may not be the offensive force that they could have been, or that we think they could have been.
That they could have been last night.
They could have been last night.
Yeah.
But I think the resolve that Ole Miss showed on the defensive side of the ball, despite having terrible numbers, let's be honest, as a defensive unit, that to me was the outstanding moment in this football game. Interceptions, key interceptions on back-to-back drives of Zach Calzada.
Woof, the first, not good.
Yeah, not great picks. The first set up a touchdown run for Snoop Connor. The second went back 52 yards for a pick six by A.J. Finley. And that was sort of the difference, right? That was what gave Ole Miss the padding here to win this football game. A&M did score late. They went for two, didn't work out. Actually had a really nice onside kick that they weren't able to recover. Huge win for Lane Kiffin. I don't know where he stands in terms of other coaching vacancies that are out there. I hope for Ole Miss's sake that he doesn't go anywhere, because he will be a commodity.
Sure.
The way that he's got them playing right now and the way that he got his defense to play in this game, I thought was just incredibly impressive. Kudos to him.
Yeah. The defense has done a really good job getting after the passer all year long. They've done a really good job of preventing some bigger plays, but you're able to push them around up front a little.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
weird thing to me, and maybe you follow this under the same thing of the KFR, keep effing running, is Devin Achane is on the Texas A&M team. He's on the field.
Yeah.
You have the option to just hand him the ball until Ole Miss stops him repeatedly in that second half. And what I think happens is Zach Calzada made a couple of nice plays. And I don't know if it's the offensive coaching staff for A&M may have just talked themselves into, he's in a rhythm, he's good to go, we're going to have a bounce. hand the ball to Devin Achane. He's on your team. Hand it to him. Politely, not so politely, pitch it to him. Whatever you want to do. Yeah. Let him line up with in the Wildcat or whatever. I don't know. That seemed like a missed opportunity to me for Texas A&M. Because Ole Miss, while they were playing with their hair on fire, which they were, especially succeeding on the ground, they weren't able to finish a ton of drives. They were moving the ball a ton, but they A&M got some stops, and the game was there for Texas A&M at times in that second half.
Yeah, it was.
And it just seemed like
it really was.
Ole Miss was the better coached team. And Ole Miss certainly left points on the board. I think there was an overthrow of a wide-open dude in the first half from Matt Corral. But, yeah, Ole Miss was able to win this game on the ground, and it was weird that Texas A&M was the team with Isaiah Spiller, not running as well as Achane, but Achane was the team to abandon that when they could have leaned on it. Again, I am not an old-school, conservative-type offensive preferrer, but... It seemed like it was there. It seemed like it was there, and to force Ole Miss to adjust, and they just kind of didn't.
The Auburn game was interesting, too. I won't say too much more here because we do need to keep moving, but they were up 28-3. You ever play the old game Excitebike? You remember that game?
Of course.
You hold down the B button, you get the turbo going, and then eventually you run out of gas. That's what happened to Auburn. Auburn, I think, eventually finally ran out of gas. They've been playing at an incredible clip here. All season long, the schedule has been brutal. It just felt like they fell off. They just ran out of gas. Will Rogers threw for 6 touchdowns on his next 7 drives after trailing.
It's unbelievable.
The defense came to play, held Auburn to just 6 the rest of the way. They ripped off 40 straight points to get the W. They're now bowl eligible. Will Rogers, by the way, just 3 incompletions after the first quarter. Had 4-15, 6 touchdowns. The only explanation for me is that Auburn ran out of juice. Like, it finally happened. We've been talking about it finally happened in this game. They ran out of juice.
Also, everything that could have gone wrong for Auburn as Mississippi State, very casually and comfortably, like, there was no panic for Mississippi State down 28-3. They're just like, all right, we're going to run our offense. We're going to spread the ball around. We're going to attack. We're going to keep attacking. And we talked about this on Solid Saturday. That's just like Mississippi State doesn't care about going down, right? You want to go up 24-7 on them? They're fine. They're just going to keep running their offense. They're not going to panic. There are reasons why they go down like they've gone down. But yeah, there was very little panic from Mississippi State to me. And the Auburn thing, again, every mistake that could happened for Auburn along the way. And so
it did.
It's unfortunate. I'm sure like a 28-3 lead, I'm sure Bill C's numbers say that team ahead is winning the game 97.8% of the time or something like that. But I suppose credit to the Mississippi State Bulldogs. And by the way, it's the weirdest thing, so I have to do it. These are just the Auburn drives in this game.
Oh no.
Touchdown, 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 touchdown. Missed field goal. Punt? Missed field goal? Punt? Downs? Hey, touchdown. Fumble, and that's it. That's the day. Oh, sorry.
You ended early, Dan. It's okay.
I know. Well, apparently so did Auburn.
All right. And the Arkansas win 16-13. I don't have a whole lot to say there, but LSU's got 6 losses for the first time in 2 decades.
It was just a game of stretches. First half for Arkansas, especially. Garrett Nussmeier made plays, but then didn't make plays. Throws a bad pick at the end. KJ Jefferson looks off and then picks up tough yards, escapes a sack, and throws a ridiculous touchdown. Like, it was a game of stretches, and Arkansas is the better coached and better prepared team to play 4-plus quarters of bad football and still win.
Moving over to the Big 12, Dan.
Guess who just got murdered?
On the same day that they dedicated a 9-foot bronze statue to one Barry Sanders outside Boone Pickens Stadium, Oklahoma State won 63-17 over TCU. You know, an obvious letdown game for TCU. That's really the only explanation.
I'm sorry, did you say game or season? Or group of seasons?
Man, yeah. 686 yards for Oklahoma State, including 451 on the ground. They went 12 of 15 on third downs. 2-for-2 on fourth. They committed just 1 penalty. Their defense was mobile, agile, hostile, and very, very good.
Whoa!
Chandler Morris, 11 for 20 for 100 yards, 103 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. So maybe some of that magic is gone, Dan.
Yeah.
We can talk a little bit more about that here momentarily. We also had Texas Tech 41-38 on a 62-yard field goal at the gun.
Yeah. Not a fluke, though, by the way. That dude's been nailing big kicks all year long.
He's 12 of 12 this season and bombed a 62-yarder, the longest field goal in program history for mm-hmm. Jonathan Garibay to win 41-38. And then we had Kansas State, 34-17 over West Virginia. The quote here from Neil Brown, quote, they did absolutely nothing in the game to beat themselves, and that's hard. Zero turnovers, one penalty the entire game. They didn't have any unforced errors. That really is the story of what Chris Klieman is trying to do at K-State, Dan. You want to go ahead and react to these three games here in the Big 12? What jumped out to you?
Oklahoma State is full on really, 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 really good at college football. Their defense is incredible, and we can talk about a letdown performance. We can talk about, you know, coming down from a high of a new quarterback, new coach, whatever, in a rivalry game. But the fact remains, Oklahoma State and the job their defense specifically, but also did they KFR? They kept effing running the ball, right?
Yeah.
Against TCU. Yeah. TCU is a broken team, a broken program at the moment. Hopefully it gets fixed and cleaned up soon. But Oklahoma State is that team that will always take advantage, especially this year, with that defense, with how angry and how fast and how well-coached they seem to be. Now, I still have my complaints about the offense at times. None last night against TCU.
No.
They kept it moving, and Oklahoma State is, they're on the periphery right now of that big playoff postseason conversation, but they certainly have an opportunity with the Sooners looking more and more vulnerable to vault up considerably. Like, I'd much rather play Notre Dame than Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
I don't know. I mean, it's...
Really?
The defense is formidable. The defense, I think, is the best of Notre Dame and Oklahoma State.
Sure.
The Oklahoma State defense is. That's the best unit that will be on that field.
Right. And in any case, not to put it in the context of the playoff quite yet,
right.
They're just so good. They're just so good. They're the class of the conference right now. Iowa State losing how they did. Iowa State almost won a game in which Brock Purdy was sloppy and they couldn't run the ball. They almost won that game against
somebody,
Texas Tech.
You know how I always joke about somebody needing to explain the Penn State running game to me?
Yeah.
I'm going to need a 5,000-word expose on the Iowa State season. From preseason hype to four losses and getting carved up by Tech's third stringer, Donovan Smith.
Yeah. This was, by the way, just because we like the broadcast part of these things, this was a Beth Mowins game, I want to say. And the only reason that is memorable and remains in my brain is... She, whenever she would say his name, the Texas Tech third string quarterback, Donovan.
She's doing a little Gus.
Donovan. But it was this like, wow, Donovan Smith. Hmm. Donovan. Brock Purdy. Yeah.
That's a Gus move. Gus is rubbing off on everybody this year.
But Gus doesn't have the wow. Like the Professor Frink from The Simpsons. Wow. Donovan Smith.
Gus's move is to emphasize the syllables that are not meant to be emphasized.
Oh, totally.
He's unexpected, and that's how he gets you.
Yeah. No, but Beth was hitting the syllables.
Yeah.
Down of them.
It's going a little bit more emphatic than usual. Okay.
Yeah. Xavier
Hutchinson. We love Beth Mullins on this show.
Yes. She's great.
Over in the Pac-12. All right. Work this through with me. We had Utah by 9 over Arizona. Back and forth game, actually.
Dude, this was weird, ugly, exciting, tragic, and anything you want to throw at this game.
Utah was without Tavian Thomas, but that's really not the reason that this was close. I think it's that Arizona is genuinely getting better. And
yes and no, but yeah, continue.
Over the last month, yes and no is fair. Over the last month, they've gradually been more competitive. And so, you know, even without Tavian Thomas, TJ Pledger still got his on the ground, but what was, I don't know, what was your read on this one? Because this is kind of a surprising score to look at. Arizona's been bad. They are getting better, but still,
Utah's
a team that scored a ton of points you know, the last five games now have all been over 34 points. They've kind of championed themselves as like the steady program in the Pac-12 South, despite the fact that it feels like it's always crumbling around them in the Pac-12 South.
Right.
And then there was this game, which was like, all right, kind of makes you want to like scratch your chin. What's the deal here?
Arizona is still a buy early candidate to me. Look at the teams that they've played relatively tough, right? So they play BYU tough to open the year. I think it's on a neutral site, whatever. It's week one, new coach, new system, new everything. They're in it against Oregon late in Eugene, right? They give UCLA a little bit. They're close against Washington. They beat Cal with the, you know, Cal's crazy shorthanded in that game. And they're in it basically the entire time against Utah. This is a well-coached team that puts its players in positions to succeed. They just don't have the players. They just don't have the talent. They're beat up at quarterback. They're beat up in a number of spots. But like Don Brown is calling this defense. Like this is the old like trope of like, he didn't forget how to coach defense over. Like he's still a good coach. They just don't have the dudes right now on both sides of the ball. Like Jed Fish has been a somewhat intuitive play calling. There's what the Michigan stamp, the like 2016-17 Michigan stamp on this Arizona team. They need to recruit. And they have to a certain extent. But this is a feisty Arizona team that is better than its, whatever it is, 1-9 record. And if they're able to up the talent level and the depth, they're going to be a bowl team. They just will. Arizona is not the most impossible place to succeed. It is a basketball school. It is in the middle of a desert, whatever. But this is a team that I think is one with upward trajectory. I don't feel necessarily that about the Washington Huskies at the moment.
Washington,
but they had that game in hand.
Washington got off to a really good start against ASU.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, Jimmy Lake was suspended. They had also fired John Donovan. And they kind of had a new offense working early. They just couldn't hold the lead. And so from that standpoint, I guess it's promising. This is a rain game. This is a goofy game. Just 90 yards passing for Jaden Daniels. He did much more of the heavy lifting with his legs. And ASU did as a whole. Rashad White, we knew he would probably have a good game against a bad run defense in Washington. And he did get his 32 carries, 184, two touchdowns on the ground as ASU comes back to get the W here on the road, 35-30. So nice win for them, given the fact that the Pac-12 South is still sort of in flux. We'll see what happens next week with the Oregon-Utah game. We also had Oregon State knocking off Stanford 35-14. Oregon State snaps an 11-game losing streak against the Cardinals. Stanford looked dreadful in this game. They really never had a chance. Started a freshman quarterback.
Yep.
We also had UCLA winning by 24 over Colorado 44-20, Dan. And of course, the USC-Cal game, which we didn't discuss in the preview, but that was postponed due to COVID. So any reaction quickly to those last three games, the ASU win, the Oregon State win, the UCLA win?
Well, Stanford trying to beat Oregon twice with how they've played since that game and really wiping the floor with the reputation of losing to the Stanford Cardinal. Without Tanner McKee, they're nowhere near competitive. And I don't know if it's just because it's Stanford, but eventually somebody's going to say, we're paying David Shaw $9 million for what exactly?
No, that's true.
What? UCLA, a nice win. Colorado's quietly gotten better. They've opened things up on offense. They were trying to run a different scheme, and they've sort of changed things up midway through the year. And so they're going to give teams some fits. Again, another team that needs the talent level to be upped, but they've got a couple good receivers there. Interesting. Good win for UCLA, though. The Arizona State win, once again, I mean, to be up and give up the pick six that they did, I think it was Dylan Morris throws it directly to Merlin Robertson, the ASU linebacker, who had kind of an easy run back. It was not a difficult pick six, but just the mistakes, the turnovers, the whatever. Like, it was just Washington is not a team that understands and is able to meet any sort of moment and win. There's not a team that is ready to win. Maybe they'll get there. Maybe it's a new coach. I like Odunze. I thought they called him Doomsday during the Oregon game. Like, it was a nickname that I missed, but his name is just Odunze. He's a talent. Jalen McMillan's a talent. But, you know, this is not a Washington team that is built to win nine games at this point. They're just not.
Over in the ACC, we had four games, I think, worth talking a little bit more about, and we had four that pretty much weren't. We had Clemson winning 44-7 over UConn. UConn ran back the opening kick and then held to just 99 yards of offense. So
yes,
a quick burst from the UConn Huskies. They lose 44-7. Louisville all over Syracuse, 41-3 with Lamar Jackson in the house. They retired his number 8. Louisville didn't do anything stupid, Dan. Look what happens when they don't.
It's unreal.
They win by 38 points at home.
Yeah.
Boston College knocks off Georgia Tech by a 41-30 score. Phil Jurkovec, a nice game, especially on the ground. I saw Zay Flowers joking around that he's faster now post-injury than he was before he went down earlier in the season. Boston College will be my lock of the week next week. They're at home against Florida State. We'll talk about the Florida State game here momentarily. Virginia Tech, 48-17 was your final there. Now,
yeah,
on the other half of the ACC, we had Wake Forest, 45-42 in a shootout over NC State. We had Notre Dame, 28-3 all over Virginia. We had Pitt in overtime over North Carolina. That one was played earlier in the week on Thursday. And then we had the bigger headline game of the weekend in the ACC. We had Florida State coming from behind in a back-and-forth game, maybe the best game of the day for my money, 31-28 over the Miami Hurricanes, Dan. React. How do you feel about those four games?
I demand you react. Okay, yes. Louisville didn't make mistakes. Who knew? And that's a good way to win games. The defense came to play. Syracuse able to move the ball a little bit on the ground, but a big struggle. Syracuse, good for Clemson, obviously, for running and running and running. The Wake-NC State game. The last five drives of this game, touchdown, 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 touchdown. Wake up at the half. I think there were five or six total interceptions of this one. This was a wild back and forth. We talked about this on Solid Saturday as definitely being 48-45 somebody, and we were pretty close. 45-42 Wake. They moved to 9-1. Just an incredible story. Who cares what happened last week against North Carolina? Speaking of which, that was a weird game. It was Thursday night, Friday night, North Carolina Pitt.
Yeah, yeah.
Pitt jumps out, looks crazy impressive. North Carolina adjusts really well. They themselves play better, and then Pitt gets it done in overtime, right? This is in Pittsburgh. So Pitt very quietly at 8-2, 5-1 in the ACC. We'll talk about Florida State, Miami. BC went down. They were down 21-7 to Georgia Tech in this one. And Phil Jurkovec, great to have him back. Because
Jerky Boys, baby. The Jerky Boys are back. The Jerky Boys are winning next week against Florida State. They're at home.
All due respect to Dennis Grossell, but this offense is 450% better with Phil Jurkovec running things. All due respect. Virginia Tech gets a win. Braxton Burmeister goes down injured, I believe. I'm not sure what his status is. I know you have thoughts about Notre Dame, Virginia. Do you want to talk about Miami, Florida State?
Let's talk about, this is the best game of the day. Miami went down.
Ridiculous.
Miami went down early, 17-0. TVD, Tyler Van Dyke looked like crap, threw two picks. And then they just got it together. And they came all the way back. TVD connected with Jalen Knighton early in the fourth quarter, made it 28-20. And then it was Florida State's turn to mount the comeback, which they did. All due credit to Jordan Travis, who had a hell of a game through the air, had a couple gritty runs late in the game, including the game-winning touchdown at the goal line. I also want to shout out Jermaine Johnson on the Florida State defensive front, who forced a key fumble. He had three sacks. He's got 11 on the season. Also had seven tackles, five of which went for a loss. Give credit to Mike Norvell, man. They started out 0-4.
Oh, yeah.
And for him to put this thing back together to get it back on the tracks after that kind of start, if they win out, and I'm skeptical they can win out, but it's certainly there. The mere fact that we're talking about Florida State as a bowl team seemed almost impossible after the first month of the season. We did a preview or a recap one of our shows where we're going through the schedule. We're like, there's no chance in hell. There is no chance in hell they're qualifying for a bowl. We're talking about them maybe firing Norvell after 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah,
he has put this thing, he's reassembled it back together and got a big win here in a rivalry spot. This one in Doak, a nice home win for the fans. TVD, look, TVD put it back together as well. And he had a rough start. Miami, I think, is still putting the pieces together around him, especially on defense. But they're going to get bowl eligible. TVD should get hype at some point. I mean, he's young. He's only a freshman. He should get hype at some point as a pro prospect because maybe more so than any other quarterback in college football right now. I'm trying to think through some of the guys that I've seen who look like they're pro caliber. He's got the size. He's definitely got the arm strength. You talk about a guy who can make all the throws. It's just, it's sure. effortless when it comes out of his hand. He's one of the only guys, I'm racking my brain here trying to think the other pro prospects right now. Truly one of the only guys, when I look at him, I say that's a pro quarterback. He looks every bit the part of a pro quarterback. Wow. They already gave him the C on the jersey. Like, Manny Diaz knows. He's got what it takes, but Florida State had what it took on Saturday to get this win in a big rivalry spot. So credit where it's due here. Big win for Norvell.
I am worried that Miami is a poorly coached college football team. I am worried with the way that they came out offensively. And look, all it was Jermaine Johnson, right? Who was like the one man wrecking crew of Florida State. He was JUCO to Georgia, now to Florida State. He's ridiculous. Florida State didn't do a ton on offense that was all that convoluted or complicated. It was a lot of Jordan Travis checking down, a lot of dink and duck stuff that were yards after the catch, whatever. He makes the huge play at the end of the game to probably two wide open receiver to win this game, but ultimately win the game. Miami had 14 penalties, five more. I saw this was, I think it was Cam Underwood, our pal at State of the U, mentioned five more declined, 19 penalized plays. It's just not a well-coached team, I don't think, because we see the upside. When you have advantage at quarterback and talent on defense and skill position players on offense, you should win the game. You should win the game 99 out of 100 times. And Miami is just not put in a position all that often. Now, I know there's injuries, there was whatever. But, I don't know, Charleston Rambo seemed like the best receiver in this game. TVD is the best quarterback in this game. Guys on defense made plays for Miami. It's just, I don't know, the way they came out flat like they did, and credit Florida State. Florida State made plays on both sides of the ball. It was an exceedingly winnable game with the lead late win. Winnable game for Miami, and just, they're not closers. They're just not closers at this point.
Did you mention the Wake game at all?
I did, just that there were a ton of picks and that it ended in a flurry of touchdowns. And, you know, you win a game throwing three picks, as Sam Hartman did, not really able to run the ball at all. I mean, a really solid win. Devin Leary lit up the Wake defense, which everybody's doing.
Everybody's doing. But NC State now, this is a weird stat, has lost 9 of its last 10 on the road at Wake since 2001. Wow. You think of the quarterbacks who have come through NC State in that time period. There have been some good quarterbacks. Sure. The last 20 years. And for whatever reason, Wake has been a little house of horrors for them. Let's close this out with Notre Dame 28-3. I think I said on one of our previews that Notre Dame is going to have 250 yards rushing. I don't know if I get credit for 249, but I came pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Brennan Armstrong did not play due to injury. That meant that Jay Woolfolk, their freshman, got the nod instead. Never really a doubt here. Notre Dame had control the entire way. The only thing I'm going to say about Notre Dame, and then I'm going to leave this at the door, and we're going to move on to the Big Ten and close out the show.
Please.
Notre Dame finishes up with Georgia Tech and Stanford. Mm-hmm. Assuming they win both those games, they will be heavy favorites to win both those games. Yep. They're just going to gradually move up. Oklahoma went down this week. They're going to move up one peg next week. They have a very good shot of getting into the top five by the end of this thing because both Michigan and Michigan State have to play Ohio State. I happen to favor Ohio State. Maybe I'll be wrong. We also have Cincinnati. They have to play SMU and Houston in the American Championship. With the way Cincinnati's been playing lately, forgive me if I'm not fully confident that they're going to win those games. Oregon could drop one next week on the road at Utah. Give them two losses. Alabama might get bounced by Georgia in the SEC Championship game. And I know Oklahoma State's creeping behind Notre Dame. I think the odds of them going, 2-0 against probably Oklahoma? I think that's pretty low. So I'm not saying, but I'm saying all Notre Dame needs to do is beat George Tech and Stanford. And by virtue of the other chaos around them, the number 4 seed in the playoff could well fall into their hands. It could fall off the back of a truck.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have to leapfrog Cincinnati, which, by the way, if Cincinnati loses to a good SMU or Houston team, whatever, then they both sit at one loss, and you're saying, well, Notre Dame has done a better job against, even though they lose by double digits at home. I understand. But if you're a head-to-head guy.
Listen, I am a head-to-head guy. I'm not advocating for this. I'm just preparing. I am preparing our listeners accordingly because this is what's going to happen. Even if Notre Dame doesn't make the playoff, just by virtue of the other games that are on the schedule from the teams in front of them, they will find their way into the top 6 of this thing. love them or hate them.
Yeah.
It's just the way it's going to be. And then if they get a little extra chaos, if a Cincinnati loses, if an Oregon loses, you know, who knows what happens in that SEC title game? I don't know, but I'm just saying it's there. It's right there.
Yeah. No, their resume is interesting in that the win against Wisconsin has aged well. And the win against, or the loss to Cincinnati will have aged probably well, even if Cincinnati doesn't run the table. But you're like, what's Notre Dame's signature win to compare? I guess it's Wisconsin, right?
We will talk about Wisconsin. Wisconsin is going to be featured in the final segment of the show. New segment.
But yeah, the Notre Dame, I mean, they're not going to play a conference championship game, so maybe that's going to set them apart in a not so good way. But yeah, they're going to be in the periphery. They're absolutely already on the periphery of the playoff conversation. So yeah, I don't know. Their schedule is chock full of decent teams. They didn't play a lot of guppies.
Dan, I do not believe in Notre Dame as a legit playoff contender. I am a Notre Dame fan. I've been a Notre Dame fan my entire life.
Yeah.
I do not believe in this team as one of...
I cannot stress enough. My belief
I do not believe that this incarnation of Notre Dame is elite.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be elite in 2021. That's kind of the
point. I just think they're going to get leapfrogged by people in the way that the committee didn't...
Unless it's a two-loss team, who's going to leapfrog them?
Who is there a two-loss team that could leapfrog Notre Dame in the standings right now with a strong finish? Is that what you're asking?
I'm asking which of those two lost teams. We could talk about that in the previous show. We're already running over here, but
no, I understand.
I just think it's just, very unlikely that if they win out and if chaos happens around them, that they're at least not in the hunt.
Now, I mean, I would take Wake, an ACC champ Wake.
You're
going to
put
Notre
Wake
Dame.
Over Notre Dame? The committee's not going to do that. No chance.
An ACC champ Wake?
No chance.
12-1 Wake.
No chance.
Okay.
No chance. They have a head-to-head opponent. Notre Dame won.
Yeah. Anyway, Notre Dame beat Virginia. Virginia's not a good team. I was skeptical of Brendan Armstrong playing with a rib injury because, again, hard to laugh, hard to cry, hard to sneeze with a rib injury, let alone navigate a difficult pocket.
They showed him in the pregame trying to throw. He still threw harder than Max Johnson, but he didn't look good.
Yeah. I knew Notre Dame was going to easily win this game as soon as I heard how, what was it, Jay Woolfolk? Is that his name?
Yep.
The guy that started? They started talking about how good he was at baseball. I'm like, this isn't a good sign.
That's a kiss of death, right?
Never a good sign. Good for Notre Dame for winning. They did. They took care of business. Kyren Williams had a super impressive touchdown run. I skimmed through this game quickly because it never seemed all that competitive. Is there anywhere else in the ACC that we need
to
touch
on? No, we need to talk about the
Big
Ten, and we need to close the show out because we're running
long. Let's do it.
Big Ten. Okay. Michigan State 40, Maryland 21. Sparty had this one at arm's length the entire way. Good game for Kenny Walker III. Iowa 27, Minnesota 22. Alex Padilla did, in fact, get the start for the Hawkeyes, and the Padilla flotilla sailed to an 8-2 mark. Not the most efficient day for Padilla. Just 11 of 24, but accounted for all three touchdowns. Had one on a long 75-yarder to Charlie Jones, which was sort of the turning point early in the third quarter. Iowa wins again, 27-22. And we had Rutgers 38, Indiana 3. Bradley Hohulin, who you know and love.
Of course.
Goes to Indiana, writes for our site. Posted this on Slack. Quote, Ty, Dan, I know you weren't planning on talking about this game in any amount of detail on the recap show, but I'd like to request that you don't even mention it. Six turnovers for Indiana, one of 14 on third downs. It has not been a good year for the Hoosiers.
Rutgers finishes with Penn State and Maryland to potentially go to a bowl game tie.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? That's got to be true.
It is true.
That's true. So there's Rutgers just demolishing Indiana. Jeez. What a year. Iowa, you mentioned, did enough to keep Floyd in Iowa City. Floyd of Rosedale.
Stays
beautiful,
there.
Beautiful, beautiful bovine trophy. Bovine? No.
It's a pig,
Bovine's
man. What are you
cow.
Talking about?
I'm an idiot. Okay. Yeah, it's a pig. Wisconsin.
No. Okay. Wisconsin's going to be in our final segment.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Anything you'd like to add on Michigan State before we move on?
No, good win, big plays. You know, if you're going to watch a Michigan State game, you're going to hear that fact that Peyton Thorne and was it Jaden Reed go back to like eighth grade playing football together.
Oh, yeah.
And their connection was fantastic once again. Kenneth Walker was great once again. You mentioned the Padilla flotilla, had the big pass. I believe it was Charlie Jones caught the pass, but otherwise took care of business. Couldn't stop Minnesota on the ground. Ultimately, didn't matter. Minnesota's passing game is nowhere near good enough to beat decent defenses. And I guess, yeah, the Mike Samford experiment, not really working out for the Gophers. But good win for Iowa, all things considered, to keep Floyd in town. You take it from here, Ty, wherever you'd like to go.
Your UTSA Roadrunners, Dan.
27-17
over Southern Miss. And San Diego State, also ranked. Close win over Nevada by a 23-21 score.
9-1 San Diego State, are they not?
They are. The Aztecs are riding high.
Brady Hoke. Yeah. I mean, any other games? I know you're saving one. Utah State gets 8-2.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Bonner's been a really nice story for Blake Anderson and the Aggies. Fresno State, comfortable win over New Mexico. Air Force, a very quiet 7-3 with a nice win over Colorado State. We really didn't talk about Kentucky Vanderbilt, but yes, Kentucky gets it done. Chris Rodriguez has a nice game. Arkansas State, who has not been good, they at least get a win on the road against Monroe. UNLV, break up the Rebels, Ty. They win again.
Yep, amazing.
They beat Hawaii by 2 touchdowns. Tulsa, who we've talked about being the nucleus of the playoff race, they get to 4-6 with a win over Tulane, a very disappointing Willie Fritz Tulane year.
I was in on Tulane, man. I thought they were going to win this one. They came back late. They were down 10. They came back. They tied it, and then they ended up losing. Damn.
Louisiana loses to Texas in week one. And everybody's like, oh, Sark's going to get this team humming like the offense in Tuscaloosa. Louisiana has done nothing but win since losing that game. So good for the Raging
Close
Cajuns
games
there.
Here and there, but they've gotten the job
that's
done.
That's true. We talked about UAB-Marshall being an interesting matchup, especially with how Marshall's able to move the ball on the ground. UAB going on the road and getting to 5-1 in Conference USA. So they're going to be a postseason conversation team. Of course, as they have been these last few years, Middle Tennessee, who I believe is now not going to the MAC. I believe that was an announcement. They are now not considering the MAC. They comfortably beat FIU. The Monarchs of ODU take down Willie Taggart and the Owls of FAU. Louisiana Tech, weird year, but they're able to take down Charlotte, who's actually been a surprisingly good team against the spread, if you pay attention to things like that. App State gets to 8-2 with a win over the Jaguars of South Alabama. Coastal goes down. Obviously, no Grayson McCall, but Georgia State, man, in a bit of a shootout.
Yeah.
Georgia State, come on. Give credit to the Panthers.
The Panthers,
where
right?
due. Yep. Bailey Zappi goes just completely wild against Rice, who, by the way, I don't know if I didn't watch this game. Rice's quarterback threw for a bajillion yards and also threw 4 picks. Jake Constantine, which is fun because we mentioned something corporate last week. Army just laid the lumber against Bucknell, which we expected. Houston, comfortable win against Temple, setting up an interesting last few games for the Cougars and Dana Holgerson. East Carolina, Ty.
ECU.
Guess what they are right now. They are bowl eligible.
Yep.
UCF also bowl eligible, but lost. Yeah, thank you. To SMU, the Maine Black Bears take it to UMass comfortably. UMass searching for a new coach. Very difficult job. Walt Bell done for the Minutemen. I think that's all I have until whatever conversation you want to have about Braylon Allen and Graham Ertz in Wisconsin.
But we need to do Doodle Alerts first. Whoa, whoa,
whoa, it's a doodle alert. The Michigan front 2-4-7, whatever. Just the Aiden Hutchinson, Ojabo, everything about that pass rush is dudes. As is Hassan Haskins. I'm going to go beyond Michigan, though. I promise you. I'm going to say Stetson Bennett. I'm going to say, anybody fast for Ohio State is a dude. Will Rogers, an absolute dude for Mississippi State and bringing back the Bulldogs against the Tigers of Auburn. God, I don't know. Cedric Tillman was very good for Tennessee against Georgia. He goes for over 200. All of Kansas, the Jayhawks are just chock full of the whole Oklahoma State defensive staff and everything involved with that. Rashad White pacing that win for ASU. He is coming up on just eternal dude right now for the Sun Devils. I don't know. Who else do you have? Anybody?
I think that does it, Dan. I think that does it for Dude Alerts. I did want to do one final segment here.
Yeah.
And talk about our Big Ten Game of the Week presented by our good friends over at DraftKings. My Big Ten game of the week, maybe it's just me, was Wisconsin 35, Northwestern 7. Why, might you ask? This had a little bit of everything. First and foremost, if you're into turnovers, maybe you are. Maybe you're a sadist. I don't know. Mm-hmm. 7 turnovers in this game, 4 for Northwestern, 3 for Wisconsin. This one was 35-0 at one point in the third quarter. At that point, you're hanging on. You're wondering, okay, 25.5 is the point spread. Mm-hmm. 25.5 is the point spread. We did have Northwestern with a garbage time touchdown, but ultimately it is Wisconsin getting the cover. They outgained Northwestern by a 497-239 margin. And Braylon Allen, we talked about him here and there throughout the course of the year. We had a Reverb call about how young he is. He's only 17.
Mm-hmm.
25 carries, 173, and 3 touchdowns. And last but certainly not least, I know that Wisconsin-Ohio State, that potential matchup in the Big Ten title game, is low-key giving Dan Rubenstein the vapors, is it not?
Oh, I'm tingling. Yep. I can't wait for that one.
You never know. You never know.
Should point out that in this one specifically, from a wagering point of view, Wisconsin does its part, scoring 35 points to get over. It was about 40.5 points.
Yep.
Northwestern not really pulling its own weight right now in the Big Ten. 35-7, so the over hits by a point and a half. And Wisconsin, by the way, 6-4 against the spread this year. So they have turned things around. Ohio State 5-4-1, should they meet. And that'll be interesting.
We would like to remind you all to download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. You can use the promo code SOLID, S-O-L-I-D. Mm-hmm. And if you bet $1 on either team to score, you will win $100 in free bets if they score. So you score with the SOLID promo code, S-O-L-I-D, this week over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. It is the official sports betting partner of the NFL. You must be 21 or older. In New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, a minimum $5 deposit and a $1 wager is required, one per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Need to get that legalese in there, but we appreciate DraftKings hopping aboard here. We'll be doing a Big Ten game of the week henceforth throughout the course of the 2021 season. Dan.
That's all I have.
That is all I have, an hour and a half strong, talking about week 11, talking about St. Bernard Saturday. We appreciate you all bearing with us. Don't forget to follow along with every episode of the Solid Verbal by going out and hitting subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, if it is somewhere else. Don't forget to go on out to solidgiveaway.com. Free, short, easy, free steps can get your hat in the ring to win that RG3 signed mini helmet. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. Check out all we have to offer, not just our old episodes, but also the articles that we post on a weekly basis. And finally, verballers.com. We've got folks who've been watching this whole damn thing, Dan. God bless them. God bless them for watching our madness here live. Your camera went black. Is it still black? I'm not. Yep, it's still black.
It definitely is.
It's still black because your take's a little too hot for camera bright and early on this Sunday morning, but we appreciate all of our certified and premium verballers stopping on by, watching us react to the week that was. Week 12 looks awesome. Week 13 looks better. Week 14 in conference championship games is going to be a real hoot. So
love
the
it.
Last 3 weeks of this season are going to go by at a record pace. It's going to feel like just yesterday we were talking about week 11. We would encourage everybody to hang on tight because these last 3 weeks are going to be awesome.
Yeah.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for supporting the show. We will be with you next on Wednesday talking all things Week 12 preview. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day and stay solid.
Peace.